The next speaker is San Hui, please. And I'll let him introduce himself. Here you go.
Thank you. A very good morning. I'm so pleased that I'm here. And I've already heard many preachers, those who think they can't speak, they really can, you know. About 9 months ago, I met a doctor named Tak Chong, where Jim knows him very well. And I got introduced to him through another friend. He said, could you come to my church and do a seminar on halftime? And I said, wow, I never do a seminar like this. But since then, I've been doing this halftime seminar for like a 2 to 3 hour session for churches. I'm doing one next week at NLCC. I've done a couple in Singapore. A bit of my background. I came to know the Lord. I came from a non-Christian family. I came to know the Lord through Youth for Christ. So as a young person, I sort of received Christ and became a Christian in the club setting. Then became the president of the club. And lo and behold, after 6 months, I discovered that, hey, you know, I've said prayer, I've led people to Christ, I've, you know, joined Bible study group, and my club grew and became the club of the year in Singapore. From 20 students to 200 students, wow, you know. But all of a sudden, I realized that, hey, I think I better be honest with myself. I want to go back to the club and tell people that, you know, Christianity is a big bluff because I'm the example. I've been there and I realized that you can go through all the motion, everything that you go through in life, do all the right thing, all the Christian thing, all the good Christian company, and yet never really discover who God is, you know. And for me, that my story began that way. And then I came to know Christ through the process. I decided not to tell them that, you know, Christianity a big bluff, because to cut the long story short, I had an encounter that sort of turned my life around. And I continued to grow through a group called the Navigators. That's how I grew to sort of learn about the scripture. I learned about how to lead other people to Christ, learn to spend one-to-one time with people, and so on and so forth. And that took me my journey till I was maybe 28, and I became a youth pastor of actually Church of Our Savior, a pastor for a short while, and I left to go overseas to study with the intention to become a missionary with a few Navigators in China. 5 of us went. I'm the only one who left behind. And for some reason, the Lord led me to the business world, and I say, hey, you know, I was there and wanting to go into China as a business. That's why I'm trained as an engineer, because the engineer allows me as a platform to get into China. But I did not. For some reason, I was moved back to a corporate world, and there I went. And again, long story short, I was in a business in Philips. Every time when the department is in trouble, I'm there to help turn around the company. That's how I started a company called Turnaround Management. One day I discovered, I said, hey, this is very interesting, you know. Why am I helping all this company and not doing it myself, you know? So I decided in 1992, I came out and did that. And I brought in all the key guys who have worked with me. What we normally do is we go to a company. And then, of course, we will assess the company. How bad is the company bleeding? And then I go in as the CEO of the company. And I'll give them a deal like this. If I can't turn the company around, I will not take a cent out of it, you know. But if I can turn the company around, I take half of your equity. So that's how I started, you know, from a poor background. So today I have like 20 companies with me. I have about 150 people full-time work for me and 200 associate staff. So just to give you a background. And I travel from Singapore, Perth. I live in 2 countries. I love the lifestyle. But the thing that, okay, I'm married with 3 kids. And my eldest son has finished the first degree, is going to do his second degree and, you know, going to be in medicine. My daughter is trained as a pharmacist. And then my youngest son is in UWA. So I have 3 kids. And me and my wife travel quite a bit. But I spend half of my time this day in small groups like this. Small groups, maybe about 5, 6. And I'll interact with them. And I'm passionate about leading them, bringing them from where they are into a position whereby they can find significance and destiny in life, so to speak. Now, so this morning, I've really lost a couple of minutes in the intro, and I'm going to very quickly give you in 15 minutes what I try to do in a half-day seminar, and I'll try. Let me just set the background first. There's interesting statistic for you. At the beginning of the 20th century, the average expectancy in America was 47, and in Asia, 45. Think, beginning of the century, that is 1929. It's about 85 years ago. In other words, not too long ago, most of us who hit 50, life one is over. It's gone. But today, when you see somebody, if they turn 50, most, you and me, have a good 30 years more productive life, so to speak. And this 30 years, it's not just ordinary 30 years. 30 years of healthy, wealthy, well-educated background, well-connected, and with all the connectivity you have, do you know the tremendous impact you can have? I often meet with people, and I hear this very often because of in my context, in my little cell group ministry, people sometimes tell me that, you know, if God, only God answered my prayer, give me just one more year, my life will be different. Just give me one more year. Please, God, I'm not going to die because of cancer. And that 1 year that God gave them revolutionized their life. It's a perspective. And that's what I want to show you, some facts. And this is a survey taken by Harvard study. It's a mid-survey. Now, what it means is never before, those people in this category, you and me inclusive, from the age 35 to 65, well, I give plus 10 in the front and 10 in the back, you are the midlifers. You are the half-timer. You and I are those baby boomers, yes, category. Now, there are approximately 70 million baby boomers USA, 1.5 million in Singapore, and about 10 million, maybe slightly less than 10 million. What is the implication? Baby boomers determine the course of direction of all that's happening in the world today. You'll be surprised. For example, I read an article recently. A certain celebrity come to Singapore, and they asked this question. If only we can get 500,000 baby boomers, I can sell all my tickets, $20 each. That show will be packed. I will make a couple of million dollars. Baby boomers, they can, you know. Today, young people struggle to even find a house. But some of the more fortunate young people, they can because their parents, their father-in-laws, son-in-law, mother-in-law, etc., etc., helps. But if you look at it carefully, think about it, the chances of most people ever own in that category, and which means the generation now, is very difficult. Imagine if a house medium range is 500,000 and you earn 50,000 a year, you probably get taxed, blah, blah, blah. You save 5,000 a year. You're very good if you save 5,000 a year. 10 years means you save 50,000. 20 years, 100,000. The house is 500,000. You have no chance. You have no chance, let alone start a business, which require at least 100 or 200K capital. You know, so just some thought. My intention is just to trigger you to think. I know I can't go a lot deeper into it. 12,000 people turn 50 every day in America. Approximately 500,000 Australians turn 50 every year. Every year, there are so many move into that category. What's the implication? Last input, about half of those people in America, aged between 50 and 70, are interested in working to help the poor. I'm so glad that we mention about the poor so often. Elderly, the other people in need, they want to stay in touch with people and to improve the quality of life for people in a community around the world. And many, many of these people are not even Christian. Can you imagine? But they have that kind of passion in the heart. So many, many baby boomers, why do they do that? Why do they do that? Half-time phenomena implies that there is an impact that can create a change. There's a guy by the name of, now I have to recall my memory, you know. A guy, a sociologist named Ronnie Stark, he wrote the book and did many, many surveys on the rise of Christianity. And he said this, a social movement is best defined as a multitude of people at a unique moment in history with a common mission who experience greater meaning in their life. The church has the common mission. The church has the moment. The church has the multitude. Actually, the world has the multitude. If you don't turn the world around, if you and I don't turn the world around, somebody will, I tell you. Somebody will. And there's a tremendous force today. Ask many of my friends in Asia, even in Chinese country, the Muslim group. They are a tremendous challenge to us. But there are many, many other groups, subgroups, and so on and so forth. Now, the last part of which, the fourth criteria for something to happen as a phenomenon in our society, in our generation, is meaning in lives. And the sad thing is this. The sad thing is this. Many, many, many people go through life and go to the grave with the song in their heart never sung. They die with the song in their heart because they have never found, why am I doing what I'm doing? What do I give my life for? There's the gap. There's a missing gap of what I call meaning. If you have a chance like me, I enjoy the book of Ecclesiastes. Some years ago, a painful experience for me, I lost my younger brother. My younger brother is in the Who's Is Who's list in Australia. He's the top 5 jazz musician in Australia. And he called me one day and says that, Sam, I have good news for you. I got a scholarship to Berkeley. The only person, Asian, Australian, to go to Berkeley and do a PhD in not just music per se, in from academics, he's a performer. And then 2 weeks later, he tells me, he says, Sam, I think I've been coughing for the last 3 weeks. Something is not right. I had a biopsy. They took a bit from my throat and found that it's cancerous. I met him. I say, hey, you look great. He can still do the one-hand push-up with me, you know, because he was the sportsman of the year in the poly, in the university, in the day, in his academic, in his college. And I was so hurt by it, but the fact that I see him so healthy, even when I was interacting, he already got cancer. The interesting thing is that process of 3 months happened so quickly. I lost him in 3 months. And what hit me was this, and some of you may go through painful experience. For me, I just couldn't read the Bible. I couldn't read the Bible. Anything would just bounce back on me, except for one book. And that's where I wanted to introduce you, the book that I love. And do you know many, many of my non-Christian businessmen, atheists, agnostics, they will tell me, you know, there's one book I enjoy very much. For some reason, it's the book of Ecclesiastes. You say, hey, when I read the book, I can identify with it. That guy say, he's right, money is the source of the solution to all problem. He's a very provocative book. But you see, the book also says that, hey, life is to eat, drink, be merry. You know, I'm just giving a bit of it. Huh? So don't misquote me. But read further until you find it stimulates you to think. It's the search for meaning in life comes from work, where a lot of people work and work and work and work their lives away. Solomon say, no, not quite. It's a search for wisdom, enlightenment, the solution in life. And Solomon say this, hey, maybe the solution in life is wisdom. And many, many people do that, actually. I met people who do research and they tell me that, you know, one day I'll find my research will find out that life on planet X exists. And therefore, we will be okay. Really? So these are the group of people who live what I call wisdom in life, enlightenment. And Solomon say, no, it's a chasing after of vanity. And then there's the group that says that, hey, but life is about pleasure. You know, but this, here Solomon is not saying, it's not about a guy who get rock, knock himself off and couldn't care less about life. He's talking about the connoisseur in life. He's talking about the best of the best, the people who enjoy the refiners of all things. He's talking about the mid-lifers who have it all, who succeed in the business, who have everything and says, now I'll take my boat, my 20, 30-foot yacht and sail. and pick all the seashell from all the seashore and enjoy all the cafe, including Cafe 54. Where's that? And enjoy everything that is there in life. And then, maybe that's what makes life worthwhile. It is about the midlifer who thinks that midlife is about a renaissance. Midlife really is about a time where you renew yourself. It's a refinement in life. It's a time you rejuvenate. It's a time where you go for something richer, more. More of life. More of relational aspect of life. More of the finest thing in life. Friend, if midlife is all about that, then many of these midlifers like me, it's not growing. Life is only more and more about myself. Significant meaning in life is when you think more and more about giving your life back. What about the fourth category? The people who say, hey, but you know, surely, like Solomon said, life is about money. Just look. Observe the people around you every day. Why are they doing what they are doing? If they tell you money is not important, Solomon said, they are bluffing. Just watch them. Look at it. Some people even get up in the morning, go to their checkbook, go to the internet and say, $600 was spent last week. $232, I bought that thing. And we pay $6,000 for a holiday and blah, blah, blah. I still have in my bottom line, $7,530. I think it's okay. We are safe. We still have. Others, maybe they look at it and they say, ooh, wow, I think I can sleep better tonight. Because why? I have $220,000 in my bank account. But money does make the world go round, isn't it? But Solomon very, very subtly put it and says that, no, this is all... Yes, I'm going to finish. Without starting my slide. So Solomon says that, let's try all this and you'll find that life is chasing after the wind. It's vanity. It's a pursuit for nothing. You know, it's a bit like the connoisseur, the people who enjoy life. Sometimes I meet with groups and I have a number of occasions like this. And I have all those guys, they dress very well, celebrities come and we chat. And you know, what do they talk about? Usually, you have a chance to plug into their conversation. They talk about nothing. That's life. So Solomon is right. He says that, hey, think. There's not much there in life. And of course, there's a last category, Solomon. By the way, Solomon is very thorough. You can think of all the aspects in life, he would have covered them. The last category, he said that, yeah, but life is worthwhile because I'm in love. I live for love and fresh air, relationship and fresh air. You know, so Solomon comes from the anger, say, hey, there's this category. And by the way, there are a lot of people will take their life away because they lose that, you know. Young people especially. But there are people who live life like that, you know, thinking that's life. But at the end of the result, what Solomon says is that they are all vanity. And that book hit me and caused me to rethink about my second half. I was already quite successful from a worldly standard point of view. But it caused me to think about a number of issues. And one of the issues, which I'm going to show you this quote, is this. By the way, this guy, Peter Drucker. Peter Drucker is a guy who mentored a man called Bob Buford. And Bob Buford is a billionaire who wrote the book called Halftime. And I just so happened to check him out and look him up, and then we became good friends. So ever since then, I worked together with him like partner in the same organization called Halftime. I take care of the Halftime organization with a group of other fellow people who journey life with me in Asia. And Peter Drucker, probably one of the... I like to just read his intro. He's the father of modern management. And about 2 years ago, by the way, he just passed on. 2 years ago, in Forbes magazine, Forbes calls him the brightest mind, you know, in America. And at age 93, imagine 93 years old, economists got him to write a 28 pages of what do you see the future of America and future of the world. He's somebody who is very far-sighted. And I picked one of his quotes in here. He said, in a few hundred years when the history of our time will be written, I think it is very probable that the most important event this historian will see is not technology. It is not the internet. It is not e-commerce. It is not that. We would think that, wow, the e-commerce will blow our mind up so much that today knowledge is so prevalent. Today, by the way, knowledge is no longer power. We used to say, even in our old proverb, knowledge is power. Try Googling, you'll find that knowledge is no longer power. But only the application of knowledge is power. Actually, it's an interesting thought. It's like truth. Truth does not change our life. Do you hear me? Truth does not change our life. Only the application of truth change our life. That puts you and me square one. Because you know a lot. All of us know a lot. But the trouble is that most people are top heavy, leg, bottom, weak, and light. Because you're not moving. You're not doing. You know, that's a principle. Truth does not change life. Only the application of truth can change your life. It is an unprecedented change in the human condition. For the first time, substantial and rapidly growing number of people have choices. I think that's the phenomenon. That for the first time ever, your parent generation, your great-grandparent generation never have that choice. They work and work and they were just stuck with it. But we in this generation has that fantastic privilege. We has lots and lots of options and choices in life. I'm not going to go through the four stages of the journey because I find you are so captivating that I must carry on a little bit more of the introduction. I will do that the next time. But 2 minutes. Now, 2 minutes, I want to share something that to me... But really, I want to share something that's upon my heart. I want to tell you this. And this thought changed my life. Do you know, a sense of destiny in your life, sense of destiny as purpose, meaning, significant, a sense of destiny comes from a deep realization that life is short. The brevity of life. I share my brother example. Within 3 months, it's over. And you have many, many stories out there, I know. If I ask some of you, you will say, yes, I know another story. Within 2 weeks, and so on and so forth. But think, I found this very helpful for me. If you know you have only 1 year to live, if I know I have only 1 year to live, I live my life differently. If you say, if I know I have only 1 day to live, 1 day you don't bother. Because 1 day you won't do very much. So think from the anger. If you have maybe 6 months, what would you have lived your life? How would you have lived it differently? A sense of the brevity of time, a sense of the fragility of life, a sense of the futility in life will give you a great sense of destiny, a great sense of purpose. And I say this to businessmen, to ordinary people, to whatever the background is the same. Because we all have 24 hours. Now, what I want to show you in my last slide, is this. The Bible talks about 33 scores and 10 years. That's an average, we live 70 years. Imagine I try to project this. And I do this quite often with a lot more colors and so on and so forth. But here, I've just given you a very brief feel of it. Now, imagine you have 70 years, just like me. And if, right, by the way, not all of us live to 70, yeah? But assume we have 70 years. 70 years translated in 1 week, Monday to Sunday. You are born on Monday morning, 0001. We pass on to be with the Lord at 72359 of Sunday evening. Imagine this carefully. What it means is, if I now put your age into it, if you are 22, I don't see anyone 22. Is there a 22? Oh, wow. Okay, great. If you are 22, you're Wednesday. If you are 45, you are already on Friday afternoon. If you are 35, you say, hey, I'm midlife. Huh? Midlife, I'm still okay. But really, are you? But if you are like me, 56, By the way, I always look a little younger. Chinese have that advantage. Right, Kara? I'm already 56. I'm not ashamed to tell you I'm 56. But 56 means what? I'm already a weekender. The week is gone. The week is gone. You are only left weekend. So you have to be very careful. You only have that few minutes. But that will determine your destiny. If you can switch gear and think of it with certain sense of intensity, you make a difference. If I have more time, I will challenge you to see it that way. But look, I draw a curve like this. This is a typical S-curve we do in business. We have a lot of businessmen here. You know what's an S-curve? It's a product life cycle. But you know, you have an S-curve of your own life. From here to here, Monday to Wednesday, you do nothing but studying, figuring what's life all about, trying to even get along and figure out what relationship is all about. By the way, there are people who at 50 still trying to figure that out. So, but if you manage, you go up here, can you imagine? By the time you are there and you are successful, you climb the corporate ladder and probably you lean on the right wall, I assume. Right? But most of us lean the wrong wall. We climb and climb and wrong wall, you know. But suppose you climb the right wall. You move up all the way at 45. Game is just about over, you know. There's no more left. Past 45, that's where your peak is. And most, by the way, most CEO hits this age. I was CEO when I was about 40. When I was 29, I became a manager. So I was on a relatively fast track. Something like that. But you like it or not, all track will go down. That's the challenge. All track will go down. Now, what is my implication? I'm going to stop now. And I haven't even started my talk, actually. Now, I want to leave a few thoughts for you to think through this. Number one, is life journey a mental journey about the various stages of our life like that? My answer to you is no. Life journey is a heart journey, H-E-A-R-T. That's why Proverbs 4:23 say, guard your heart with all vigilance. Intensely monitor your heart, for out of it flows the meaning in life, the virtues in life, the energy in life. Look all the version that you can find, Proverbs 4:23. I love it. It gives you a few dimensions to it. But what he says is, life has got a high level of choices. Choices means intentionality. Intentionality means I have to make a decision that I want my life to be different. I want to give my life to Jesus Christ. I want the world to be different because I am a part of the global kingdom perspective that I may be just that little one, but I want my life to count for something. And that makes a lot of difference. I've decided a long time ago, money is not my God. Work is not my God. Relationship is important, but it's still secondary. The deepest of all relationship must be the deeper inner relationship you have, your inner life. Now, having said that, I will just close with this one statement. Most people go through life, like me too, we will sail through what I call the 80-20 principle. 80-20 principle means this, that like all engineers, we just roughly know it's right and we do it. Most of us go through life knowing that 80% is just right, we go for it. But you know the scriptural principle, you study it carefully, and I searched when I came to know Christ at a point where I said, God, I must tell these young people like me, Christianity is a big bluff. When it rains, you say, well, God have a purpose. When it didn't rain, you say, praise the Lord. Either way, you win, you know. So I said, this is ridiculous. But what's the difference? What is really the difference? The real difference is this. The difference is these two words. One is knowing about God. The other one is knowing God. And I'm passionate about telling people this because I go through life running again and again. I tell people, life is not about the X factor. The X factor is how do you multiply your life? How to make life successful? The life factor most critical is called the T factor, transformation factor. And transformation factor can only begin in a person's half-time journey at a point where he himself encounter the burning bush experience. Somewhere in your journey, you must say, hey, God, it burns and it burns, but the bush is still burning, you know. And that's an inner reality of God in your life. And if that is negated, you are zero. You have all people like me, too, if I'm in that state. Hypocrisy is the word. We will be hypocritic. We are zero. It means nothing. You are just like, in this timeline, a dot in eternity. It means nothing. But if that dot has got a purpose, the way I'm shaped differently, like, you know, we hear so many speakers shaped differently, that various shape will put you and me into a purpose that is just uniquely you. Because you are shaped differently. You have a different experience. You have different ability. You have different heart passion. You have different personality. Now, you have a different experience because experience shaped you a lot, especially painful experience, which I shared just now about my own journey. And those painful experience, those education experience, those work experience, those really shape you for a purpose, for a purpose, for a destiny. And God have one for you and me. We are different. But yours and mine, though shaped differently, will fit in this good, great picture. He's pushing me, so I have to stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Sanwi, for this short presentation. No, very good, very good. Thank you so much. Right, I need to see my notes.